I'm Fathery.
This is Dave.
This is Sohail.
And this is Text Trek.
Engage.
Welcome back aboard the Starship Texas for the 273rd installment of the Text Trek podcast, the home of Star Trek fandom from deep in the heart of Texas, where we take a deep look at Star Trek, old and new. And tonight we are talking about not Star Trek, but something very close, an episode of Black Mirror, a British sci-fi anthology, if you don't know what I'm talking about, but season 4, episode 1, USS Callister. Yes, it's British. You didn't know that?
I didn't know that.
You thought they just had like all these British actors on an American production? They're shooting it in L.A. or something.
This episode had a few Americans in it. Like
it did.
Oh yeah. Well, after the show got bought by Netflix, I think they started using a lot more like American talent. But it's still like the writers and like the crew and like the main, like they still shoot it in the UK.
Oh, okay. I didn't realize that. Well, I didn't just go show you. I didn't look into production.
See, I thought you were being sarcastic, Sohail, because this is like such a well-known British production.
I know. Jeez. Yeah. I thought you were making fun of me for being like, in case you didn't know about Black Mirror, because it's not as big in the pop culture as it was, say, you know, 5-6 years ago. So
right. That was like its time and place.
And you can watch this episode in a vacuum. It has nothing to do with anything else because the show is an anthology, like The Twilight Zone or any of those other type of sci-fi anthologies that kind of ripped off The Twilight Zone, like Outer Limits and, you know, what have you. So you can just watch this by itself, out of order, without seeing any other Black Mirrors. It doesn't matter. It's the beauty of it. It is very much Star Trek focused, so I recommend it to all the Trekkies out there. If you can handle some dark sci-fi.
Yeah, it is like the broken mirror image of Galaxy Quest.
And there's never been a better time to watch it and talk about it, because we just had the news that director Toby Haynes might be making a Star Trek movie in the future. Who knows with the movies? They keep announcing things. We don't know when we'll get a Trek movie, but there will be a 14th Star Trek movie in theaters someday, and maybe it'll be directed by Toby Haynes. Before we start unpacking all of this, though, just a little bit of quick housekeeping. I have to give a big thank you and shout out to all the lovely, lovely Text Trek Patreon supporters who make the weekly live show possible. That is you, Starfleet Sohail, but also Cake is Eternal, Crazy Dutchie, Joanne Robertson, John Dye, Geek Filter, Earl Grey Trekkie, Quarkspar, Stephanie Durantas, Braxton, Chuck A, and our anonymous supporters. Thank each and every one of you so much. We like to celebrate with our patrons with a monthly watch party, so you can come in at whatever tier you can help out at, and if you come in as little as $2 a month, that will still go a long way to help us make our content, and it will get you into the monthly watch parties. We have the next one scheduled for February 17th. We're going to be watching a Valentine's Day inspired episode, the Voyager episode, Someone to Watch Over Me.
Have I seen that one?
It was season 5. You might have slept through it, but is that the one where she sings
"You Are My Sunshine"?
Yes, yeah. It's then basically, yes, okay. The Doctor is kind of as a non-human tries to give a not quite human 7 of 9 lessons in romance, and
it's also a British production.
It's not. it was made in the good old U.S. of A. But that'll be February 17th, so Saturday, February 17th.
Right on.
So, yeah. I also wanted to encourage people to subscribe to the YouTube channel. I was thinking it would be fun if we got to 1701 subscribers in there. So we're like around 1300 or 1400 right now. But let's try to get that to 1701. I don't know. I'll sing a song. I guess I sing my least favorite song, Faith of the Heart from Star Trek Enterprise, when we hit 1000. So I don't know what y'all want me to sing for 1701.
Father, I have an idea.
What is that?
Uhura's song that she sings in TOS. But to Charlie, to Charlie.
Okay. Yeah, the Charlie X song. The Charlie's our new darling. I don't know. But let's try to get 1701. I think we can do it. So please share if you can't help us out on Patreon. You know, you can subscribe on YouTube. You can share, ask your friends to subscribe, or you can rate the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts. I saw on Spotify we're at like a 4.2. It's like, come on, we should at least be a 4.7. Right. So give us if you have not given Textrek a 5-star review on Spotify and you have a Spotify account, which damn near everyone I know has a Spotify account. So
I don't. I don't have one.
Well, that's okay. But I know you have Apple Music, so you can do it there. But wherever your podcast platform of choice, let's rate the.
Does it aggregate, show. Or does each platform have a different rating for Textrek? Do you have 5 on iTunes or something?
Yeah, each platform is going to have a different rating system, so you can rate us everywhere.
Oh, cool. Okay. So. We'll do. Okay. I'll create a Spotify account just for you.
Hell yeah.
Well, I appreciate that. I have rated, I think it's still labeled Starfleet Boy, but if I haven't rated that, that will be my homework assignment. I will do that this weekend. I will do that tonight.
Thank you. I appreciate it.
There is a little bit of Star Trek news this week also. The Section 31 casting. We have several actors now. They're shooting. They started shooting. So at Monday, they began cameras rolling, and they'll be shooting for about 6 weeks. But the actors they announced, Omari Hardwick, Casey Rohl, Emmy winner Sam Richardson, I know him from Ted Lasso, Sven Roigrok, Robert Kaczynski, Humberly Gonzalez, James Hiroyuki Lau. And the only one of those people that I knew besides Sam Richardson was Robert Kaczynski. He was out of the Australian Father and Son in the Pacific Rim movie Guillermo del Toro did with the mech robots and kaiju. Australian Father and Son Jaeger team. He was the son. So okay. These other faces and names are new to me, but looking forward to seeing them in the Section 31 movie probably later this year. I'm thinking that'll be a fall or winter release on Paramount Plus.
Yeah, that's it's nice to see some movement on that. Although I don't know any of those people either.
But yeah, I see Rachel in the live audience is saying she's glad they are finally filming. So yeah, the cameras have started rolling. So finally.
I was not initially excited for Section 31, but when they showed that image of Michelle Yeoh with the clapper, I don't know why. I just got so excited. It's like, okay, fine.
She's the kind of person who can light up a room or terrify a room or whatever she needs to do.
Whatever she
needs. There's a reason why she has that star power energy. You know, there's a reason why they took that picture with her and not Omari Hardwick or Humberly Gonzalez or one of these other people, you know. So.
I want to join in the disappointment about Ash Tyler not being in, or at least as far as we know, Shahzad Latif is not in it.
Yes,
because my mom, she's like the biggest fan of Shahzad Latif. She was so excited.
A lot of people are
about,
fans. Yeah. Him. Yeah. He was very well liked in Discovery seasons 1 and 2.
Yeah.
He's a busy actor, though. I know he's like on some other TV show, though. So I think he's.
She didn't even know his character's name. She just kept saying, like, when is Shahzad coming out?
That's funny.
It makes me wonder, are they not going back to the 23rd century? Because they could really do any time period. And if the 25th century is so popular now post Star Trek Picard season 3, maybe that's where they're going to drop her off. You know, why not?
Oh.
Like, there's no reason that she has to be exactly in the 23rd century. It just has to be closer to that than where she was in the time of Discovery. So
they have access to the Guardian of Forever. Is that right?
Yeah, that's what sent her back in time.
Right.
So
Carl. He's known as Carl.
Is it possible they may be moving around? No one set location?
Possible.
Well, yeah, but I don't know how she's going to have time travel like when she gets where she's going. It's not like.
Right.
Like, the Guardian of Forever wasn't like, but you can come back, you know, whenever you want, or is more like, I'm going to send you somewhere where you're going to stay. I guess it was like a one-way trip was the impression.
They have the opportunity to codify some of that stuff if they wanted, so.
I feel like Georgiou had to go back because that whole thing that was messing with her physiology because
yes,
she was too far away from, like, the point where she came through, yeah.
That's why I was saying it had to be closer than where she left in Discovery. But it didn't have to be exactly in the 23rd century, I don't think. But that was the reason why they're sending her back, is because her body was going to fall apart being outside of its universe and so far away from its time period, it was like you can do one or the other, but not both. So mm-hmm. she just had to be closer to the 23rd century. They don't say like exactly like how close. So if they drop her off and it's like post Picard season 3, it'd be like, well, you know, that's a lot closer than the 31st century. So you'll be okay. But yeah, they have options, I guess is the point I'm saying. Without Shazad there, I think they have options. We'll find out soon. But yeah, I don't have anything else on news. I guess like the Bill Shatner documentary it's coming out on his birthday in March,
Oh my gosh, why am I so out of it? What's this Bill Shatner documentary? Did it just get
it's actually a year old. It premiered at South by Southwest here in Austin last year in March. And then this year we get the premiere of the final season of Disco in a month. So.
Oh, all right.
You know, Father, when we're ready to jump into this episode, the USS
Callister. Let's jump in now.
I feel like Shatner's a good jumping off point because Shatner is known to be not the nicest and coolest dude in the real world. But, like, the crew of the Callister wishes that their captain was as nice as William Shatner.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Because this is a far more toxic and terrifying version of him. It's like,
yeah,
Charlie
even
X.
Even George Takei would be like, oh, I would take Bill over this guy, for sure. Oh, my. Dave, why don't you give us your first, the first opening statement, and we'll just each take turns expressing our general thoughts and feelings on this episode before we discuss it in more detail.
Sure. And, you know, just for people who are new to Black Mirror, I'll say that most of these episodes take place in something that would be the near future, you know, 5 years, 10 years, 20 years, something like that. And, you know, so this of course, imagines a virtual world, an MMO, where you could, with someone's DNA, essentially create an exact duplicate of them within that world. Theoretically, so they just have a great time in games and stuff like that. You know, I guess that's Ray Player One-ish. And, but yes, you've got this guy who's kind of a broken and sort of incel-ish type of a programmer and designer. And this is the story of him and the people trying to resist him. I was pretty happy with this. You know, it's funny. I thought that it wasn't quite the like A plus it could have been, given that it's written by the show's creator, Charlie Brooker. What is it?
William Bridges and Charlie Brooker.
Charlie Brooker, right. He's the show's creator. And I have seen some episodes from him that, I mean, they are genius episodes. This one I didn't think was quite up there, but I like its story. It's darkly funny throughout, from characters realizing that they are like Ken dolls and Barbie dolls with no genitalia in this digital world. But it's touching on something that's, you know, a real and super serious problem, which is, you know, kind of increasing toxicity among young males, but kind of born out of, in many cases, real problems, real loneliness and alienation and depression. And I want to talk about that later on, because early in this, I think you do have some sympathy for this character before you see how awful he is, just really how terrible he's become. And then kind of sympathy tends to go out the window. But I'll be interested to talk about that. On a directing level, and I know we'll get more into this as we go, because we want to talk about Toby Haynes, the director, who yes. might be doing the Trek thing. I thought did a really great job of capturing a look of mostly homaging TOS, but some TNG in there, a little bit like the kind of blend Galaxy Quest did. And, you know, those dramatic close-ups on the actors, to the kind of cavernous darkness of the software place he works at, that he's, like, hypothetical head of. You know, that being able to make this place feel kind of morose and toxic just visually, I thought, you know, there's some interesting work going on in there. And there's lots more to talk about on the directing level, but we'll get more into that as we move along. But yeah, my general impression is I thought it was quite good episode, just not quite at the peaks that I've seen Black Mirror hit.
Sohel, what about you? What was your general impressions on this one?
I liked it. It's similar, you know, kind of to what Dave was saying. I feel like I watched Black Mirror up till this episode, and then I stopped for some reason because there's no play history afterwards on my Netflix, and I don't remember. Yeah, so I don't know what
you're
happened.
Just watching it to get to the Trek episode, and then you're like, okay, I was watching this, must be the one everyone's talking about. I'm good.
Man, if you can get past the first episode with the pig thing, then you can watch anything.
That's true. I forgot about that.
But I have not.
Or you might have watched out of order, because I know like there's earlier episodes than this that I've tried to talk to Dave about. I'm like, Dave, have you seen the one with the bees? And he always tells me, like, no, I haven't seen that one yet.
I was an early adopter of this when it was like, you know, hard to get and not on Netflix. But I only saw like the first season that way, and then I think some of season two. So and then I've seen scattershot stuff since then. So yeah, I don't have like a full view of it either.
So anyways, going back to this episode, I really thought it was a good episode. I hated, what's his name? The main character.
Jesse Plemons' character.
Yeah. Robert Daly. Yeah.
Robert Daly. Actually, I knew a guy named Bob Daly. So but I liked Bob Daly. he was not like Robert Daly here. But I liked it because it was, you know, usually when you have like, when you see a character like him, who's kind of like, who doesn't have kind of like the confidence and doesn't like speak up for themselves and like takes a lot of beating in real life, usually they're kind because of all of that. But this was like the opposite.
Yeah. I actually think there's more of these. More people turn into little dickheads when they start feeling sorry for themselves than actually, you know, start showing kindness.
We're all a little bit myopic on this because we, you know, look at our own circle of friends, and I like to think that we're all lucky enough to know more of the, we probably personally know more people who might, like, if, you know, if they're a little alienated, be on the better side of things. But in the world, I think you might be right, Fathery.
Yeah, I know more Robert Daly type people.
Really? Oh Jesus! It's because of the message boards you're on, Fathery. Get off of the toxic Reddit boards.
Get off of the Reddit or whatever.
But what else you got, Sohel?
I was surprised by that, but I also thought it was interesting how he something I didn't think of when I first watched it was it's a lot like how children kind of emulate, like how he's being bullied, and then they like when they play they emulate their bulliers or whatever.
Yeah,
and that's kind of how the vibe was. I thought, of course, he was, you know, much worse, but that also spoke to how in video games we kind of will do things that we would never think of doing in real life because we think, oh, these characters are just, you know, they're sprites or whatever, they're not, you know, they're not real, like they don't have real emotions. But in this case, they really do, you know, like these characters did. So
yeah, we're a long ways off from that level of tech, or a good ways off at least. It would all still be just emulating, you know, something that looks like sentience. But these characters, yeah, obviously supposed to be sentient, and that is a truly horrific idea because of the ways it could be abused, as right. Which is really only glimpsed in this episode. But yeah.
And then the other interesting thing going off of that was just, you know, I like to follow technology and, you know, especially like artificial intelligence and things like that. And I just thought that was a really interesting concept. We've seen it before, whether it's through time travel shenanigans or cloning or something like Sim, you know, like in Enterprise, like that clone of you has your memories up to a certain point. So I like that little transition period where, sorry, I can't remember her name.
Nanette,
thank you. Yeah, Nanette comes on board and she's going through this like crisis because she thinks she's Nanette. And like, because she is, like, she really is. But then they have to like explain to her, like, you're like a clone or you're like this. Like, so from this point on, this Nanette has different experiences. So I think this is one of their most, you know, again, I think this is definitely going to get me back into watching Black Mirror because I thought it was very clever. There's a lot of interesting concepts, but overall also it is very like, it's very tense. Like it's a good thing I haven't seen it in a long time because I went through all the kind of tense moments again of like trying to reach the singularity or the wormhole and like trying to trick Bob Daly into thinking, you know, like trying to trick him so he can pause the game so they can do all these things. It was all very,
suspenseful.
Very good.
Suspenseful.
I liked it. So yeah, overall, I thought it was pretty good. And, you know, I caught a lot more reference. I caught a lot more like Star Trek kind of in like references.
Oh, yeah.
And
there's Gornegs in here. Yeah. we're not going to do like a Gorneg segment like we're talking about a new Trek episode, but we would have had that option. I mean, there's enough. But I'll point some of that out as we were talking our way through the episode. But anything else, Sohel?
No, I'm just excited to talk about this episode further.
For me, I agree with y'all. I think this is a very good episode. I think I like it a bit more than Dave. I think this is one of my more like favorite Black Mirror episodes. There are some that are just like so damn good, but I would still just put this up in like my top five probably. But it just has, like, that good marriage of good writing and acting that makes the characters feel so real. Like, all of these people feel like a real person, feel totally realized, and just, like, an hour and 16-minute story or whatever. That's very, very hard to do, so I'm impressed when you pull it off right, you don't really, like, think about it or question it. But if you stop and, like, oh, wait, like, those people, they did come off as particularly, like, realistic. And I also love that it's, like, set during Christmas time, because I like Christmassy stuff, so. But I was actually, like, a bit, like, uncomfortable a bit watching this for the first time since 2018, probably, but just there was a lot that I found relatable, just, like, this nerdy dude who feels like a lot of isolation and copes by escapism, which is something I've been guilty of my entire life. But I think there's a bit of a cautionary tale here about, you know, the dangers of, like, that type of, like, isolation, and you cope by escaping to your own little fantasy world that you build all about, you know, pleasing yourself, and it becomes, like, very selfish and self-indulgent, and if you lose those human connections, if you get to the point where, like, you don't love anyone else, if you don't care about anyone else, then I think it does turn you a bit monstrous, to where people only exist as objects to please you. Or to have some type of influence on your experience. And that's the only role that they serve once you stop caring about anyone else but yourself.
In this, you're right. He has, like, no friends depicted in it. Nobody he's close to.
We've seen Annette try to reach out and kind of the struggles with that on both ends with Robert and Annette both.
Yeah, early on, you could definitely feel, I think, sympathy for him. He's just very socially awkward. And doesn't know kind of how to respond to her praise. He, you know, easily could have used it to enrich a friendship, but also, of course, the guy who sort of stole his labors and appropriated the company kind of swoops in on her too, and he just becomes more and more, like, almost instantly embittered.
You can also read this as having a lot to say on Star Trek fandom itself and kind of the franchise and our occasional obsessions with nostalgia, which I don't think anyone can deny. You know, like, a lot of, I guess, pop culture franchises are kind of based on that now because it's been shown to be profitable, unfortunately. So we get, like, a lot of, you know, a lot of monetized, commodified nostalgia bait out there. You know, they play around with that. And I also, as we talk our way through the episode, I want to point out Toby Haynes's direction. And there's a lot there that I want to praise. And starting with the fact that I read that this was kind of a rushed shoot. It was kind of a, you know, like, they didn't have, like, a very generous schedule. And a lot of people who worked on it, they really praised Toby Haynes's leadership pulling it off. So.
Came through in a clutch.
Yeah, let's, I guess, just start off with the beginning. You know, speaking of the direction, there's a lot that we can kind of get from here of what a Toby Haynes Star Trek movie might actually look like. And he has some fun playing around with, like, the beginning. You know, it's very, like, the original series. You know, they want to make it look like an old sci-fi show. And then we get kind of, like, that hard cut to reality when there's, the smash cut to Robert Daly in the elevator, and he looks, we go from him, you know, being the victorious captain on the bridge. He defeated his enemy and is kissing all the girls. And then it cuts to him looking miserable, going to work on the elevator. And then just the entire style of cinematography changes. The aspect ratio changes. It gets more like handheld camera. What do you call that? That French word you like to say, Dave?
Cinema verite.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah, it's meant to feel realistic and appropriate kind of a real-life moment. Even before that, of course, there is a creepy turn, because the opening approximates for several minutes a TOS episode. But then, when all's said and done, one of the characters, for kind of daring to kind of question him, begs for forgiveness. You know, it'd be like Sulu suddenly begging Kirk, please forgive me, at the very end. And he starts kissing all the girls. And it turns creepy. So we're already kind of primed to be a little bit on edge when we get to that. But yeah,
it's disturbing. It's disturbing to see, like, the fanboy power fantasy start to get realistically fucked up, you know?
Right. but yeah, there's all those elements in that first sequence. You know, Jesse Plemons, who plays the lead.
He's from Texas, by the way. He's from Dallas. Daly.
Yeah, I've seen that guy in enough stuff now that I'm really starting to like him. Mm-hmm. I'm very impressed in general.
Yeah.
But yeah, in that opening scene, we've got him doing a pretty, you know, intense Shatner pastiche. It's not like a full-on Shatner. He's not trying to do exactly Shatner, but
it's kind of a bad a bad like accent impersonation, but yeah. it's like oh, this is what he does like in private, you know, like he does, this is like his like little play act voice that he does when he's playing with his action figure.
Well, yes.
But you know, they've got their, they have like a con like villain, there's a Nebula escape sequence, you know, clearly they are aware of Trek's tropes in all of these, like highly aware of it. I saw Joel in the audience, I think, say it would have been nice to see some non-toxic fans in this.
Yeah.
Really the only representation we have of the fandom is this one guy. But it's...
I actually, I think that we can assume that Dudani is a bit of a fan, too, because he knew that the shuttle couldn't keep up with the ship. He says, that shuttle's a jalopy. So I took that as like, oh, this nerdy dude also watched a lot of Space Fleet, and he just is not a sociopath.
Yeah, yeah, he does bust out, you know, more, like some quick knowledge sometimes. So yeah, I think you're probably right. But it wasn't an episode that was about kind of, I guess, being fair to the fandom.
Yeah.
It was about critiquing toxicity.
It was about holding up a Black Mirror to the fandom.
Right.
This is what you look like. This is your reflection.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah, broadly, the show could be described as cynical. I suppose it's actually very telling that this is one of, like, really only a... And there's few enough episodes of Black Mirror that end on a happy note. You could probably count them on one hand, and this is one of them. This has a sort of encouraging ending, which is kind of, I think, an acknowledgement of Star Trek sort of values, or at least the, you know, the vibe of Star Trek, maybe.
It really is relatable when you see him in his little, like, office space, and it's surrounded by all of his nerd memorabilia, or, like, I mean, like, I'm looking around a room right now that I'm recording this in, and I have, like Star Trek model ships from Eagle Moss next to me, and then, like, the Star Trek encyclopedia on the shelf across the room from, it's just, I kind of feel, like, personally attacked, not really, but I feel like the relatability, it's like, oh, they're talking about me here a little bit, but it's really funny when Nanette comes into Robert's office and introduces herself and is so impressed by all of his collection and everything. And is like, oh, wow, you have VHS, DVD, Blu-ray. And he's like, yeah, and it's all on streaming now. It's all on Netflix. And that's funny because I own, in this home that I'm in, I have physical copies of the original series on VHS, DVD, and Blu-ray. But I don't need any of it because it's all streaming. So...
I think I can go out on a limb and say, Father, you do not have his toxic side. But
yeah.
I think it's good to be able to, like, see that kind of stuff, you know, of ourselves when we have larger-than-life characters in movies or any entertainment. And, like, see something that's like, oh, yeah, there, but for the grace of God, go I. Or, you know, have those moments when you can connect and say, hey, you know, I'm not perfect. I could be in this situation. And I would if I had the power.
And, you know, I think also, like, one thing that this episode doesn't do, which is give him redemption, like, you know, like, you could say that, like, you know, like, which is kind of interesting, but I also kind of found it to be very satisfying. I just realized, because we were talking about Toby Haynes, he's, like, one of my favorite TV directors. I didn't realize he did, like...
We should point out Andor. He was the main director on Andor, which is
I thought he only did two episodes of that.
No, he did six episodes of Andor. He's done most of my favorite episodes of Doctor Who, including A Christmas Carol with the 11th Doctor.
Wow.
He did Sherlock, the Reichenbach Falls episode.
He's done other episodes of Black Mirror beyond this one. This is just we're just talking about this one because it's the Star Trek-y one, but.
He did two episodes of that British series, Being Human, the werewolf story. I don't know if
I like that show. Yeah.
So, yeah. Yeah.
Good.
So he did that. So, yeah. And Jonathan Strange and Mr. Norrell, which is a great novel. And I haven't really watched the series yet, but he directed seven episodes. So I think he just directed most of the episodes on that series. So, yeah, he's a pretty good director. And of course, he's got that. So I really hope now that I've seen his IMDb and I'm like, oh, wait, I know Toby Haynes really well. I've seen like all his work, almost not all of it. But so I'm now more excited and really hoping he gets that untitled Star Trek project.
And with TV directing, you know, television is more of a product of the writer than the director, which is kind of the opposite of movies, where it's more of a product of the director than anyone else. But this is a bit of an atypical project here. USS Callister, where they were intentionally going to have to direct something very differently and very stylistic. And so this is also a good example of his influence. If he was going to try to do something, hey, make this look and feel Star Trek. So we kind of get the Strange New Worlds vibes of a TV show, like 3 or 4 years before Strange New Worlds was a thing. When they start showing stuff on the ship later in the episode, after that initial opening that was very TOS inspired, but they show modern looking shots that are kind of lit, inspired by like those TOS purple colors and stuff like that. And the controls and the consoles are still very like TOS colorful, but a bit more detailed. It looks good and high definition. I'm like, right. Oh my God, this show looks like this is the look that they used for Strange New Worlds, basically.
Yeah. If I'm not mistaken, this came out in 2017. So that was right around the time that there was also like the Orville was doing its
Discovery
thing.
Season 1 was out Disco. And Orville Season 1 was out.
So there was just this sudden like Trek stuff everywhere, including sort of like both imitators and like, you know, arguably satirists like in this one.
What did y'all think about the decision when Daly decides like, oh, I guess I'm gonna like throw Nanette into my torture room also? It seems like it really doesn't take much to get on his bad side, right?
Right. He's got a kind of defeatist approach, it seems like, where it's like, well, I'm never gonna connect with her, or just that it's that much easier for him to. All he needs is some DNA from a person, and he could put them in his simulator. And so he's like, oh, well, I could do that. And this is the side that I can't be very forgiving towards at all, because it's horrible. The actress who Nanette talks to, who kind of warns him about him, she's like, oh, you know, watch out. He's got a kind of creepy stare. And
he's scary.
He does.
Oh, Shania, right.
Wide berth, yeah.
Yeah.
She is one of my favorite performances in here, because she feels so real. Like, she feels like, mm-hmm. I don't know that many British people, but I know a few. But yeah, she seems like probably overbearing to work with. She's like high energy, probably like works hard, has high expectations of people like working around her, but she's a bit of like a take charge person. And you see that like later when Nanette is brought on into the game, into Infinity. She's the one who kind of like steps up in like the leader position to kind of help ease her into their miserable existence and be the one kind of comforting her and stuff like that.
Elizabeth Boyd says it's Michaela Cole.
Okay, that's the actress. Yeah, I don't know her from other projects, but yeah, she's got like sort of an intense vibe and a little bit of an office gossip too.
But like when she's saying like wide berth, that's my, it's like, oh yeah, that seems like, oh, she's like warning her coworker.
It's probably a good idea.
<It's>, yeah, like, probably. Like, it's unfortunate that like women have to like have these conversations to like feel safe, but that's like I was saying, it feels very realistic.
Yeah, it's where things start getting uncomfortable. But, you know, when he came in, when he first walks in, he's kind of, nobody's making a space for him. The secretary that never looks up to acknowledge him. And, you know, definitely that's partly his fault. Like, it seems like he doesn't particularly engage well with people. But there is some truth to him having, you know, when he's walked on by his, the co-founder of the company. And the guy barely is like, oh yeah, I guess, you know, technically he's co-founder. You know, he just, it's like an afterthought. Yeah,
he's the TCO. Walton, his partner, is the CEO.
CEO. But after getting to know Robert better as a character, I can totally see why everyone's creeped out by him and just kind of wants to stay away, because he's not, it's, you know, like sometimes people are hiding a good nature, but he's hiding a bad nature that like also seeps into real life, because well, he's collecting DNA and stuff like that. I mean, it's all like very creepy, kind of like bad behavior that
around the office taking a DNA samples with a cotton swab, you're probably not up to anything good. But I do want to point something out that actually Joel in the audience mentioned this in the Text Trek Discord server. By the way, join the Text Trek Discord server. There should be a link in the description wherever you're watching or listening to this, and we can keep the conversation going over there. But Joel is pointing out there's kind of a connection between Dune, the science fiction series Dune, and this, with like the DNA containing memories. I thought that was kind of interesting parallel, since Dune's about to come out also. So it's strangely relevant to have DNA memory in your science fiction right now. But
Elizabeth, that's right. I forgot that was Todd from Breaking Bad.
That's right. Yeah, that was the first thing that I totally saw him in, that I saw Jesse Plemons in, was Breaking Bad. And then here, I haven't watched the TV show Fargo, but I know he's in that as well. And I've heard good things about him in that, and good things about that show in general. What do y'all think about, like, their kind of community, their kind of existence? Just, they commiserate in between, like, these missions that they have to go on. I guess their only joy in life is they can drink. The alcohol actually seems to have some type of effect. They say, like, the detail in this place is exquisite, so.
You know what's interesting? It's almost like a water cooler environment there, but, like, if the boss, you know, like, if it was, like, the 1800s, and, you know, the boss could have you beaten, or something like that, so that they actually have to live in terror, and all they can do is desperately, you know, hope to kind of escape his wrath. And they all have fallen in line, and they're kind of broken by it. So, you know, it's a shock when she comes in with this notion, like, that maybe they should try and get out. But, you know what I did want to mention, though, as far as directing goes, when she first appears, you know, she essentially materializes in a room. She's by herself. And I thought that there's, you know, the directing in that sequence really captured her kind of the shock, the fear that she goes through, and just the I don't even know quite how to describe it. It's just the sheer strangeness of.
Well, Kristen Milioti is really good in this episode. I really liked her performance. There's one thing that I think I would have done differently if I was directing this with that sequence, but I'll let you finish your thought on that.
You know, I didn't have anything important to say about it. I just wanted, like, it's one of those things where on a directing level, I thought it really accomplished the task of feeling the disorienting day one feeling of someone appearing in this terrifying virtual world.
But what I would have done different is I would have had her, like, really, like, cry and break down when it really hit her that, like, she wasn't going to get out of here. I was like, this is the point where she needs to have, like, a big breakdown. And whenever I'm watching something and it's, like, at that point and then, like, the actor doesn't do it, I always, like, wonder, like, Are they able to, like, you know, turn on the waterworks and have, like, a big emotional breakdown? And I know that she can because she does it later, right before she sees the wormhole. So I would have moved that big cry moment to here.
See, I kind of disagree. Me. I think the shock. Yeah, took, right. I think she needed, like, you know, this is the kind of thing that can almost take days to really process.
Sure, that's fair.
I'm with Dave on that too. Yeah, seeing these stills, it just reminds me how good, like, what you were saying about, like, the TOS vibe, but with the more modern kind of look to it. Which
it's very
cool.
Much in line. I was surprised when I started, looking at the episode, like, how much it kind of lines up with Strange
New Worlds.
They even
did the penlight.
Like, shots of the bridge where you can see the colorful computer consoles out of focus in the background. It's just, like, this beautiful blur of green and orange and yellow and red. And I love it so much. But I have to give a lot of credit to Toby Haynes and Black Mirror. Y'all did it first before Strange New World. I mean, Star Trek was doing it in the 60s on the original series, recreating that.
Which came first, the Star Trek or the parody?
or the homage.
Joel in the audience mentioned the 60s hair being really well done. And, you know, Plemons, of course, has, like, kind of a Captain Kirk swoop to his hair.
There are some fun Gorn Eggy moments when Nanette is in the ship for the first time, and then Daly appears and he has his hand held out like Gary Mitchell. Then he snaps his fingers like Q and he makes her face disappear like Charlie X.
Right, right. One of the most disturbing TOS scenes ever, to be honest.
Was that one, yeah.
It's that
true.
One, yeah, where, yeah, godlike Charlie X does exactly that. This is, in his way, more horrible because, like, I guess I assume that if he hadn't, or does he change her back in Charlie X? That if he hadn't, she would have, like, died of suffocation. But here, very specifically, he says, oh, I could keep you like this, you know, gasping perpetually forever. You know, and that's when you know that this guy has like, past the point of, like, kind of being sympathetic. So when he gets a kind of there's sort of a bit of vengefulness about the ending, you know, as if they're, you know, like, bringing down Khan, where you're like, hey, this guy needs to get knocked down. Oh yeah, Joel also mentioned I have no mouth and I must scream, famous Harlan Ellison short story. Absolutely, all you know, that imprint is for sure on this.
But a lot of people don't really like their day job, and then they come home and to vent their frustrations, they go into video games and kill things. They're mean to strangers. They fight strangers online and they're mean to them. It's just, like, a lot of people will blow off steam by being an asshole in a virtual setting like this.
Sure. You know, but I think there is, of course, a big difference. Like, we know that, you know, these characters are purely digital, that we're not hurting anybody. There is something to be said for kind of, like, engaging with a desire for violence. Like, is it better to try and push it out of your mind and, like, have it not be there at all, or to engage with it and enjoy it in a fictional way?
It was something that we talked about a lot when we were covering DS9 and talking about Julian and Miles in the Holosuite. Like, when they go, you know, recreate these wars, are they like actually like chopping guys up with swords when they're doing like these battles in medieval Ireland, or are they actually like getting like that graphic and violent with it?
The the show never really tells you, but my sense, just because they weren't talking about it like, oh wow, that was we accidentally committed a war crime today or anything like that, is that it was more like a World War II era movie, you know, where it was like they went through the events of it, but it was somewhat sanitized.
But that says a lot too. It's like, oh, I want to do like a lot of violence, but I just want to have like the fun, victorious part of it and like a clean, sanitized version where like the murdering is enjoyable. It's like, okay, does that make it less fucked up or more fucked up? These are all like fun questions to ask in science fiction and things like Star Trek and Black Mirror. That's why I love it.
I think when you learn to govern your passions, then any kind of violence, whether it's real or make-believe, is no longer satisfying or appealing to us. That's at least been my experience. Like,
it sounds very Vulcan. It's like govern your passions. It's like
I did directly use
they will be at your undoing, fathery.
Exactly.
It feels very Star Trek Online to me when Daly like takes them on a mission. Basically, it's like we see like the playthrough of a level in this game. Again, very very Strange New Worlds looking, like when they beam down, it's like, oh, they didn't quite have like the AR wall they have on Strange New Worlds, but you know, kind of a similar style, inspired by Vasquez Rock a bit.
Yeah,
what do y'all think about like that fight with Valdak, the office bully guy who's turned into like his Khan like rival, as Dave pointed out the similarity to Khan?
I love that still of him. He looks like he's rocking out if his gun was a guitar.
The shot, like when it first shows him on top of the rock.
Yes, it is quite amazing because he has the long hair of an 80s rocker, and so the big gun he's carrying might as well be a guitar.
We find out the spider is the lady Jillian, who wouldn't play along. So she get if you don't play by the rules. He tells Cole, he breaks character for a little bit. He tells Cole, it's like, it works a lot better if you throw yourself into it. That's what Dave told me when we went to Scare for a Cure for the first time. He was like, you know, Father, this will work a lot better if you throw yourself into it.
Which is, for people who don't know Scare for a Cure, it is a haunted house with a little bit more interactivity. You know, you'll talk to some of the
people. It's like a haunted house and an escape room had a baby.
Yeah, a little bit.
It sprays blood on you, too.
The creature, the idea that you would turn a person into a creature like this, that's when it's maybe most like Harlan Ellison's I Have No Mouth and I Must Scream, or at least...
Or is it a person? He's just turning like this data, this code he took off of someone's DNA.
Well, it seems like they still retain their consciousness in whatever he turns them into, because later when they turn back, they're like, oh my God, I have a real body. I'm like myself. You know, like,
But he clearly like doesn't see it as, I don't think he views them as people. I think he's like messed around with enough like software and stuff that to him, they're just all like ones and zeros.
For sure. Like, and what would be weird is to know that, like, intellectually, they are. It's just that those ones and zeros now have sentience, and that changes everything, you know?
But is that not what we all are? We're all just, like, some data and information inside of an organic computer, inside of this machine made out of brain tissue.
It would be nice if we could stop hurting each other as well.
Exactly.
The pizza delivery, like when he had to pause the game for a pizza delivery, that felt pretty realistic. Anytime you're doing any type of, I don't know, like group activity that involves some form of, what's the word I'm looking for? The illusion of, when you're trying to maintain the illusion of something.
Oh, right. Immersiveness.
You get an immersion break when someone's like, oh, pause the game. I gotta get the pizza that's at the door.
Right. Or mom wants me to take out the garbage.
Yeah.
See also Galaxy Quest.
Yeah, so I liked that, and then poor Valdak guy, the office bully. End me, let me die with honor. He's just like, I think not. I think today I will show you mercy.
this is some of its best dark humor.
Black Mirror. Great example of Black Mirror.
Yes, if Kirk had actually said that in a show, we would have thought like, yes, so noble, what a good guy. But here we know he's like, you don't get out that easy. He's using Kirk's words, but it's to torment this guy, and it is darkly funny.
It is pretty funny.
Part of it, by the way, was that guy's performance and his look.
Yeah. Do you think they filmed this in like a quarry and then like just?
I think they shot it on a set inside of a warehouse in England.
I have a question for you guys. Like in that scene, like. Does it, you know, occur to you when you're watching something like this, even if it's broadly more about, like, this guy's toxicity, like, when they kind of have this very over-the-top villain or technobabble, do you feel that they're mocking Trek? You know, was this guy, like...
Oh, not at all.
Too mocking of, like, Trek melodrama or Trek villains?
No, it felt like... It felt like he understood it. It felt like homages that put, like, that he put some effort into.
It felt like they were more on the side of like, yeah, exactly, like an homage or like, you know, I like showing a fondness or a sentimentalness for that kind of over the top, you know, stuff rather than mocking it to me as well.
At one point, like Nanette, I forget what the scene was, but she kind of like scoffs at something like, I can't believe they're, but it's kind of like, I think more like, I can't believe we're playing along with this.
Right.
Before she realizes quite how serious it is. But yeah, I wasn't particularly offended either, but you know, you could argue that guy was like a somewhat harsh take on a Khan type of character.
I'll bully you if you make that argument. I'll be like, you need to get over it. You need to get over this.
Oh, I see how it is.
I'll be the office bully who nut checks you like all that guy at the beginning.
But you know what? Something I wanted to bring up. Speaking of bully guy, the guy who's the CEO, who you know we know kind of robbed the company from him inside the game world. What's his name?
Walton.
Inside the game world, he's comes across as a solidly decent guy who's especially concerned because he was tormented with like a digital version of his son being killed before his eyes. Near the very end, he actually apologizes to Plemons' character by saying, "Hey, well, you know, I did you dirty in the real world. I really did that." And I was surprised in a way that he wasn't. He was kind of the cynical one, you know, in this setting. But I was surprised he actually wasn't a little bit of a worse person.
He's Dave, favorite character in the thing, but I'm going to wait till we get to the end to explain
why.
Well,
I was also going to say, Dave, I actually like that he started to apologize, but then he says, no, actually, I am not. He's like, F you, and then he gets burned, you know? Like, so I kind of like that. And again, it kind of just like goes back to my thing of like, you know, maybe Bob kind of is like not deserving of the treatment, but like maybe people are sensing that he's weird and creepy and mean inside. And so people react unconsciously.
Right. He has kind of somewhat made his bed.
Exactly. Right. You know, I'm not saying that they're not at fault. I think it's bad that the other characters treat him that way as well. I just think that after seeing how he is in his make-believe world, like I can't help but imagine that some of that bleeds out, or at least like on a subconscious level people sense it, because like there are people like that like, you know, he might be a sociopath, you know, or something like that. Or
you're saying it's, you know, okay, some... to steal a company from a sociopath?
Yeah. I mean, so. Someone should have stolen Elon Musk's company.
Oh my god, yeah, that's the truth. We got to some real truth tonight.
When they come back from the away mission and he does his celebration of kissing all the girls that they, you know, establish at the beginning, this is how he likes to end his missions, and Nanette slaps him during the middle of the song and celebration, Walton has the oh holy fuck reaction. It is scary. It's like legitimate scary, you know. So hell, you're talking about like the good suspense earlier. You know, another example of him choosing to show mercy, I guess. But after this kind of Nanette starts, when she finds out the, what, what this existence will be like. And it's like, oh yeah, by the way, like your genitalia, like your body, your own like body, you don't even have anymore. You know, the I think the famous line from this episode, stealing my pussy is a red fucking line. I feel like I should get 1701 subscribers just for saying that. I didn't sing anything, but
I jotted down a few lines, fathery, and that was one of them. Also, this was a good succinct version from Walton of what's going on. He says, it's a bubble universe ruled by an asshole god. Yeah. I was like, that is a really good, concise description.
It's funny to me when he said, like, our little, like, plastic Kindle mounds have no sensation. We've even tried, like, rubbing them up against each other just out of pure boredom. just to see if that would be it makes sense that, like, you probably would try that at some point. It's like, well, why not? You know, we don't have anything else to do.
That is the level of a little more extra detail that they go to in Black Mirror. they're not going to just say that they got left Ken dolls. They're going to be like, then what would happen?
but Nanette has like a, she's the, you know, she's not the cynical prisoner who's given up, you know, who's been like, had the hope beaten out of her. She's like, no, we can do this. We can get out of here. So she wants to try everything. At first, she's like, oh, look, I can like hack into here and send a message to myself. So you know, she tries that and all I thought it was like actually good writing. It was like, it feels, you know, kind of organic that it would be so like, oh, you can just send an invite for the game, so it has to be like limited in the characters and everything. Kind of explains like why they're not able to just like call the police or something.
Right.
You get the sequence where you see her like in the real world for a little bit. You know, we kind of forgot there's like real Nanette, which you have to have that set up for the end. So it's good structurally. And then you get like the big suspense when Daddy comes home. Like Nanette is so excited. She's like, oh my God, it's me or the cops. We're all getting out of here. We're all going to be free. And then as soon as Jesse Plemons steps onto the bridge, she turns into like a scared little dog. She's like my like little like Chihuahua mixed dog Amos when he's scared and trembling. Like she like does that. And it was like really good physical acting.
Yeah, that was one of those very suspenseful scenes. It's painful because her real life counterpart poses her digital counterpart,
right?
But in a way that you would expect, like, oh hey, did I just get some weird spam? What's this? Really unnerving. Yeah, because you don't know how far this guy will go.
And the rules they set up, like, they're real good with like being consistent with. I mean, yeah, it doesn't make sense. You can get memories out of DNA, or that like you would be able to, I don't know, put like a this little thing on your brain, and then you can be in like this virtual world. Like none of this technology makes sense, but it's internally
stuff. Yeah.
That's not real. It's like I think Elon Musk just wants his like stock investors to think it's real. But sounds like he like tortured a bunch of monkeys. But
the level they're showing on this is we're certainly not there yet.
But within the episode, it's internally consistent, which I respect. I think that's good writing in science fiction.
It's also like, you know, I was thinking of some of the stuff that this, it's Toby Haynes, that's the director?
Yes.
Yeah,
director, that he does visually, like, to show that, like, we understand just innately visually when we see that little bead go up against him and his eyes go white, what is happening. This is something they've always been good at on Black Mirror, is concise visual representations of sometimes pretty wild technology and stuff. But also, he did a neat thing when Nanette is being uploaded. They show the little progress bar of her upload as it's, you know, almost, you know, getting there. And you see Plemons watching the progress bar because he's like closer, closer. He's clearly very excited about it. And they're just intercutting it with the real person, completely oblivious to it. And I thought that was just a neat, you know, storytelling to just,
you know. What an invasion of privacy. We have all these privacy concerns now in the virtual age. It's like a really fucked up form of that.
Mm-hmm. Well, yeah, someone could hack one of these DNA banks that now do your DNA, you know, family, whatever thing, and get your information and make clones of you or whatever they want to do with it.
Right.
Weird stuff.
But then we get like the breakdown moment that I mentioned earlier where she is crying. She's feeling like really defeated after her first plan doesn't work. All it did was get her friend turned into a bug when he turns Lowry into the new spider creature.
Yeah, very disconcerting. You hear her like legs snap into place and stuff.
But we get the wormhole setup, like their salvation, and it makes sense because they placed the setup for that earlier in the episode with the software patch. They make a big deal about like the software patch, and it's going to be at, you know, Christmas Eve and blah 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 blah. So that was all well laid out structurally, you know, compliments to the, on the writing side. But when Nanette gets like the big plan, it's like, okay, this is how we're really going to do it. We're going to make sure that we blackmail myself so that I clean out the fridge, get rid of all the DNA. He won't be able to recreate any of us ever again. And then Walt is like, I won't do that because I'm so scared of the guy because of what he did to my kid. And that story, when you hear about his boy Tommy and how Daly brought him into the game just to murder him in front of Walton, just so you can watch your kid die in front of you. Not your actual kid, but a perfect recreation that will feel the pain, that will die this painful death in space. And you
he describes
have to
it
watch
really
this.
Horrifyingly too.
Again, pointing out like the detail is so perfect when he says, have you ever seen an unsuited body compress in space, freeze and crack like a porcelain doll? And that's not actually what happens if a human body is dumped into space, but that's probably what happened in the Space Fleet show. So that's what happens in this game. It is like a terrible, painful death. It is horrifying. And I frequently say on the show, but I think the worst part of the human experience is the death of a loved one. That is the single worst thing that can happen to anyone, unless you're a psychopath like Robert Daly, who doesn't love anyone. But otherwise, like, the death of a loved one is the worst possible thing that can happen to any of us. And I think that I say this as someone who's not a parent, but I think we would probably all agree that, like, the death of a child is, I think that's the worst thing that can happen to a human. I don't know. I'm sure like any parent would be like, yeah, that is absolutely the worst thing you could do to me. It's really well realized here. Like you feel his pain, and this guy who's probably a scumbag, the CEO, you know, we see how he probably harasses all of his female employees. He probably does like a lot of shady business deals. You know, he talks about earlier or later when he tells Daly how, yeah, I did kind of like screw you out of a lot of credit, and you are a genius. And he is a really nasty person, but because he has that love, he has that connection, he cares about someone else. There is someone that he cares about. And because right. of that, that's why I think it's like the most important thing of the episode, the most important theme is the importance of that connection, as opposed to living in isolation like Robert Daly, who does slide into being a monster. It's kind of like a very like passive form of being a monster, but it's still monstrous.
Right, they sort of flip what it looks like, you know, if maybe in the first 5 minutes of just seeing him at the office, you might find your your sympathies with Robert, and then you may then later switch to
James. It becomes
James.
A subversion, yeah.
Yeah, that's actually almost in its way traditional Star Trek, right, to take somebody who might be a villain, especially on something like Deep Space Nine, for instance, and then reveal these nuances of them that kind of recontextualizes it all.
Yeah, there's kind of an overlap. And I do want to compliment one of the shots in that airlock sequence. That is like my favorite part of the episode, by the way, is when Walton tells the story of his kid, Tommy. But there's a shot in there. It's a POV shot of like Tommy's perspective in the airlock looking through the window at his dad. And then the camera pulls away suddenly. Like that was like Tommy's POV when he was blown out into space. It was the camera pulling back. And that's really neat filmmaking. So we can compliment Toby Haynes on that cool shot. That was a good idea. But yeah, that sequence, I think, is my favorite part of the episode, largely because I think the score, the music is phenomenally good there. It was well edited, but we got to give a lot of credit to the Walton actor, Jimmy Simpson, who plays our evil robot Dreadnought on Star Trek Prodigy.
That's right. By the way,
wait a second, Walton is Dreadnought?
Somebody mentioned
I saw someone
in the comments. Yeah. Way early.
Oh, wow.
But I missed that. I'd forgotten or did not know. By the way, they don't show they don't show you the kid dying. They give you a father's memory of it, and you see his reaction to it. But you know, that is also a level of restraint that I appreciate. You know, Star Trek doesn't need to be exploitive, and you know, Black Mirror, although it sometimes pushes boundaries, isn't usually exploitive, really. And so I you know, it speaks well of the directing style that they held some restraint there.
Well, I guess let's talk about, like, our ending, you know, kind of when they pull off the plot. Nanette gets Walton on board when she tells him, like, you know, if you believe in us, you know, we can do this, we can rally together, and we'll make sure your boy Tommy is never recreated in here and tortured again. So she tries to do the distraction thing with Daly when she's going to get kind of flirty with him. He did have, like, some level of attraction to her, because he goes along with it when she strips down and gets in the water.
He just does a PG-level attraction kind of in the game. You know, they told her earlier, oh yeah, kissing him sucks, but at least there's no tongue.
At least there's
stuff
no tongue.
Because they, like, he's adhering to more or less the principles that they would have had in filming the show.
Like, this guy is a virgin. I don't think he would feel comfortable having sex because they never showed it on Space Fleet. They never showed it on the TV show. So he can't go all the way. He has to stop at first base.
He seems awkward when she invites him into the water, and it takes a little while before he's willing to kind of go in.
Even in this is like his private sanctuary. So if he was like reluctant in here, think how terrified he would be in the physical realm if a woman, you know, showed him some attention.
They do,
arguably,
by the way,
a sad thing, but like again, you know, at this point, there's no sympathy for him in the episode. He's given
but
it
it's
up.
It's a classic monster movie thing where, you know, even if we're watching, you know, Godzilla Minus One, or if we're watching Frankenstein from 1930, whatever, or like, mm-hmm. you know, we there's a lot of times where filmmakers still make us sympathize with the monster and the monster story. It's interesting. But I guess it just makes them feel more real, you know, more like a real creature.
You know what's kind of exciting? This is another part where this mirrors like an actual Star Trek plot. This is the moment in it would be a moment in the Star Trek story where they start to take control and agency over their fate. This is, you know, when Kirk bites the apple and says, "I don't like to lose," in Wrath of Khan, and you find out, oh, he and Spock have been talking in code, and he's got a plan. So there's some energy that you're like building up in these sequences.
When you see them work together, yeah, I love the cooperative. Right. But I think that also ties into the theme of having like those human connections and other people you care about besides just yourself, because then you're able to work together to be a crew. It's more of a space fleet thing than just being like the asshole captain who's like, oh, I'm always right because I'm the perfect captain main character dude. So I guess in a way it's kind of saying like, hey, maybe Star Trek is better if you're more of an ensemble show like Deep Space Nine, as opposed to like, oh, we're just going to mainly focus on Kirk like the original series. I don't know. Maybe we can layer that in there too.
I wonder if these photos are from the actress's actual photo album.
So let's talk about when they hack her Nanette's phone and they pull up all of her photos and stuff. Dave, you were complimenting Black Mirror being kind of restrained and not showing like the gruesome death of a child. It does seem a little weird to me. I still have enough of like that 20th century mindset where I'm like, okay, if you are like rated R, if you're gonna be on like HBO or like whatever, like if you're on like one of the platforms where like you can show nudity, it just seems like weird to like have like a perfect opportunity to and then not do it. But yeah, that's just a different, like, now we have like easy access to pornographic images that we didn't have in the 20th century, so it's just like a different style now.
I mean basically, you see her in some lingerie and stuff like that. She clearly took some photos for her boyfriend.
It just seems very, if this was made in any other country that wasn't America or the UK, then like we would have at least seen one nipple at some. If this was done in like France or Germany or like anywhere,
you know, I think they were aware that they would be having a Trek audience there, and they wanted a little bit of restraint.
Yeah, they didn't want to scare the Robert Dalys. Who like, oh my god,
you know what? It's not just the Robert Dalys. There could be people who can be a little timid about sex who are not monsters.
That's fair. No, that's fair. but it is funny the her reaction, like all that stuff was funny when Walton, who you could tell, he's like a bit of a humble dude. He's not like he's not the he'll fuck a ham sandwich before it hits the floor type guy anymore. I mean, he can't be in this virtual world,
right.
But he's just kind of like, oh, like nice bedding. And he's just, you know, he's not being like a obnoxious pervert like you would kind of expect. You know, he's after you watch your kid freeze to death in space, it kind of mellows you out, I suppose.
I thought this scene was actually a little tropey, to be honest. You know, everybody ogles the nude girl and nobody finds it a little bit awkward that they're going to have to blackmail a real person with, you know, this. So I actually kind of didn't like this scene. It's one of the few that I wasn't super into.
Not only do they blackmail a real person, but they make her murder a guy, basically. They make her commit manslaughter.
What does she do? Well, what does she do?
Well, everything goes into act. I don't know if he's murdered or he's catatoned.
But they say no. They say that they're all going to be like off work for 10 days. How everyone's like shut down for the holidays. So he's going to be left alone in his home for 10 days, stuck in the game.
He's caught in the loop.
Wait, does she have any notion of what she's doing though?
It probably occurs to her, you know, like next week when she goes to work and they're like, oh my god, did you hear about Robert Daly? He was found dead in his apartment.
But that's okay, because now her alter ego is in cyberspace and can tell her how awful everything was, and then, like, you know, relinquish her from the guild. So
is this still going to have, like, a spinoff show, or is that gone?
No, I don't think that was ever actually a real thing. And I heard that too. That's a bad idea. That's a bad idea. I don't want that. But there is not there. That is.
I don't think it's a bad idea, Fathery, because I think there is, like, a lot that could be mined with people trapped in a virtual world still. But, like, they'd be in, I guess, the broader sci-fi universe. They'd be, like, you know, in a Star Trek ship, but in a, I don't know, a big Mass Effect-type world. And the way that they might try to interact with the real world, or enjoy themselves, or, you know, comment, they could comment on gaming culture, infinite aspects of that. I think that there could be something done with it. But it would cease to become as Trek adjacent as it is here.
Well, even that last shot, it's kind of like Star Trek 2009, like, so.
Right, right.
So I think it, but I mean, yeah, I could see her, you know, Nanette and company having at least a TV miniseries or a movie. Like, I wouldn't.
Right.
I don't know if you can.
Seems like the way, with, like, each episode kind of having a focus to it.
Focus,
by the way,
or something like that. Yeah.
I didn't quite finish. The one thing I wanted to say when they were looking at the photos, something that did crack me up a little bit was when they've been going and somebody's like, well, which one do we choose? And what is somebody's like, I think any of the last seven would work or whatever. That was pretty good.
The last nine.
Last nine, yeah.
When they look at the asteroid belt on the computer screen, it's very reminiscent of Balance of Terror. So that's, like, another little corn egg. Oh, and then, like, their uniforms also, when there's, like, close-ups, you see, like, they have, like, a whole lot of their little Space Fleet insignia.
Yeah.
It's kind of like how they do on Starfleet uniforms.
Right, that super
now.
Intense design work where there's, like, a lattice of miniature
where you can see a lot more detail in the higher resolution.
I have a question about the inner workings of the of this virtual world. He's got, like, sort of godlike control, but what does he have to be, like, near you or, like, within your proximity? He can't make a ship change.
Oh, that's a good point. Like, why couldn't he, you know, make their faces go away or whatever when he was chasing them in the shuttle? I didn't think about that, but I guess it is a proximity thing. Maybe he has to have, like, direct line of sight,
like,
or something.
Had to have programmed the ship. But, like, maybe he's given himself powers, essentially, godlike powers to manipulate things around him, but he had to have programmed that.
But I'm sure it was fun for Toby Haynes as a Star Trek nerd to be directing the sequence when they get to do all the fun, like, rocking around on the bridge, and you get the cool heroic moment from Walton when he does make his big sacrifice. And I love that he has, like, that final call with Daly when he does give him, like, the almost apology when he's like, I would apologize, but then you threw my son out an airlock, so fuck you to death.
Right, yeah, that's a good line. But like, within the almost apology, you know, surely lurks a sentiment he once held. So I assume that is, like, you know, him saying, I had been a piece of shit, but I'm not going to, like, actually apologize to you at this point.
And Star Trek is, like, a franchise that's supposed to focus on, you know, hope and optimism and making the future better than today. It's very funny to me. It's so anti-Star Trek that kind of, like, you know, the big climax when your big third act goal, objective of these characters that they're trying to accomplish, that the antagonist is getting in their way, trying to stop them, but they just want to die. They want to commit suicide. They're trying to fly into this wormhole because they think it will kill them. It will make them cease to exist. So they're all, like, holding hands, like, hoping that they're about to think their final thought and go away. It's
so Black Mirror.
Yeah, it is. It's very grim, very Black Mirror, and very, like, anti-Star Trek.
It's so sad that the amount of like, this is their only hope for a release from the...
is to just stop,
is to just, like, for it to all end.
And you get more fun cinematography stuff from Toby Haynes when they get to pass through the wormhole, and he does all his weird distortion stuff. It's not that far away from what Toon Day does on
picture.
Discovery.
Oh,
when Michael Burnham went through the wormhole Red Angel stuff at the end of season 2, Such Sweet Sorrow part 2, it's kind of similar to that. And then they come out and it looks like and then Toby Haynes is like, look, I could also do one of JJ's Star Trek movies. Give me the fourth Kelvin movie.
100%.
I got the lens flare. I got all the lens flare you want,
everything,
baby.
Yeah.
And the Apple Store brightness and whiteness of it all.
Right.
Because we end with they're in, like, the main part of the game, the main Infinity I guess, I don't know, multiplayer online right. environment, and it looks like they're on the bridge of Star Trek 09.
I think they say it's like an infinite procedurally generated kind of universe, so like in its way, it is like a real universe.
So these guys are like now sentient NPCs permanently in this Infinity game, which is kind of cool.
Well, one presumes they probably have, well, I don't know, like, you know, this is obviously a little bit like Tron territory where they can make up whatever rules they want, but I would imagine they would probably have a little bit more power than your average NPC. I think that'd be one of those things that'd be kind of fun to see them testing out, and like, you know, had they done a spinoff show, is like, well, can we break a mission that's an existing mission? Can we do that?
What's weird is that, like, what would be interesting and weird is, like, if they figure out a way to leave the game and come into
reality. That's what I was thinking would be the, you know, the kind of the final thing. Like, you know, I don't know if this world would have any way to accommodate that. It seems like it'd be really tough, but like that maybe you could get like weirdly like drop your digital, you know, brain into like a robot body, if nothing else, like in the mm-hmm. real world. Which also sounds kind of horrible, but like, I'd be like Cypher in the Matrix. I'd be like, ignorance is bliss. Go ahead and put me back in the space world. because they are not depicting a future that's that far from us. So they can't make a full clone body and drop a brain in it, I think.
And with some of these technologies, it's going to be exponential. So we may actually get to these places within our lifetimes a lot quicker than we
thought. It is kind of crazy. Because I did not think that once upon a time, but now, yeah.
Joel in the live audience is pointing out the Aaron Paul cameo. I know Aaron Paul voices the other gamer, but he says...
Who's Aaron Paul?
Is that right?
He plays
Jesse
on Breaking Bad.
Yeah. Oh, okay.
He got his own movie.
I should know that. I like Jesse on Breaking Bad.
The spinoff thing, just because I feel like we should set the record straight. I think that was just kind of a rumored thing that circulated in like 2018. I don't see anything like on the internet more recently than 2018.
I heard that recently.
I mean, I
thought so too, which is, you know, I don't know, you know, I didn't vet it or anything. So I'm, you know, right. You may well be right, Father, and I'm not like pinning hopes on this. I just think that there would be interesting possibilities.
I thought it was a good idea when it was first floated, but then like the more I thought about it, the more it seemed like I don't see how it would work because. At least like not with these characters. I think they would need to like recast, or it would be hard to like book like all these same actors on like a long term show. And
sure,
I don't know what like the basic premise of like they're inside of a video game. It just feels like it would be so different. Like whatever it would become would be it would only be like the same thing, kind of in name only. I guess you could build continuity off of some of these characters, off of like some of their like we know that Nanette had like a crazy night in Vegas with a guy named Elliot, and we know that Walton has like a kid named Tommy. But I don't like what would they be like? I don't know.
That's what the
would it be like.
Wreck-It
Ralph? Would it be like Wreck-It Ralph, where they just do like different video? Is it like Reboot, where they're like just they have to like score points? Or...
Let me give you an example. Let's say they did that first episode, and they're like, first of all, the kind of during the fun opening, they're testing the limits of how they can bend and stuff the video game rules of the world that they're in. So that kind of gets you that, and they're trying to figure out what they want to do, and they're even debating that. But say what's his name is like, I want to try and contact my son in the real world. I want to see if that's possible. And that's like episode one is sort of like, that's his serious goal. But they're also like, oh, but you know, the thing is our ship is running low on fuel. And within the game world, we got to get some fuel. And so we have to go on like a mission or two. And you can do some commentary on gaming while you're doing that. Even as they've got this meta thing that they're trying to interact with the real world. And you know, maybe starting to figure out, is there any way they could get, you know, transfer their sentience back to the real world?
I guess what I'm saying is like, I don't see how, I think that would be too expensive to do on television where you're having to like recreate like a different video game every week. It's like, if you're making it look like a TV show from the 20th century, if that's what your game looks like, you know, that'd be easy. But like, if you wanted to have video games that felt like in any way kind of like actual video games, then you'd have to do like big fantasy stuff. You would have to do, I don't know, some type of like maybe like a cyberpunk type game. You'd have to do like some type of like Old West type game. You'd have to do like a bunch of different. It just seems like it'd be hard to pull off as a TV show.
I don't think it's probably
going to
happen.
They could do it animated. They could do an animated version of it.
See, I wouldn't want to see it animated. I need to see some live actors doing this because I think that's what's important to it is that feeling of these being real people.
See, that's what Joel says. Joel says they could go all 8-bit and save money. Yeah, do some NES graphics.
What I was going to say is, like, again, to me, like, I definitely would like to see a little bit more, but not too, I'm not so interested in it that I could see it being, like, a six season or a 3-season or even a 5-season. It's just, like, I would like to revisit this world just to kind of get a little more, but I'm not, like, keen on it being a show that I'm going to follow.
Yeah,
like,
and I kind of, like, part of the beauty of things like Black Mirror and The Twilight Zone is that you just get, like, a little tiny sampling, and then the rest is left up to your imagination. And I kind of like that, and I kind of like how these stories just kind of end on a, you know, well, the rest is up to you, dear audience member. Like, you imagine what happens next.
Have we ever gotten a series spinoff from an anthology show like that? Like, where you just have, like, an episode and it's so good that a whole series spun off from it? Like, I don't think that's ever happened, has it?
I feel like there is some example of that, but it's definitely I think it would be, like, extremely rare, and I can't immediately think of one.
Yeah, I can't think of something.
You know, it'd be like if they were like, you know, that Twilight Zone where there's that creature on the plane's wing? That was so good. Let's do a whole mini series about creatures, different creatures on different planes.
I guess with, like, an anthology show, like, any episode could be a backdoor pilot for something.
Yeah.
True.
Yeah, I mean, in its weird way, the closest thing might be, like, how, what's his name on TOS, which, while not an anthology show, was a kind of episode of the week, planet of the week, standalone episodes thing, and they built, you know, their spinoff show. What's the name of the guy I'm trying to think of?
You're thinking of Gary Seven.
Yeah, Gary Seven.
Yeah, Simon, like, Earth.
Right. So Simon Earth, right. A little similar. Not one to one.
Yeah.
But, you know, I've said for a long time, I think Star Trek Discovery Season 2, Episode 2, the churchy episode. New Eden. I think Akiva Goldsman wanted that to be a backdoor pilot for Strange New Worlds. It's very Pike-focused. It's like a self-contained Planet of the Week type episode where Pike goes down on this planet and he helps this dude at the church. And I think that was kind of their proof of concept for Strange New Worlds. So, you know, the backdoor pilot has not gone away.
I think the whole second season was proof of concept for Pike series. Like, everyone wanted it after seeing it was, like, everything.
This is fun discussing Black Mirror. So I got to do
something different other than Star Trek. Although I love to talk about Star Trek.
Star Trek with F-bombs.
well, next week, Dave and I will talk about a almost not quite Star Trek, but it won't have any F-bombs. But
what are you guys talking about?
We're going to talk about a Galaxy Quest.
Oh, right on.
And hopefully Rachel will be joining us. The three of us just went and saw that movie in theaters. It had a screening here in Austin. And so we're like, hey, we're talking about Black Mirror. We might as well talk about Galaxy Quest, too.
Yeah.
I can't wait.
It's the one Trek show that kind of is quasi accepted into the canon, you know, when people are ranking favorite movies and stuff like that. I feel like it has earned its spot.
Yeah, and if it's streaming somewhere, I'll toss it on in the
I love Galaxy Quest, but I never think of it as, like, another Star Trek series. Like,
I mean, I don't either. I think, but it's like, but it's Star Trek adjacent. It's Star Trek adjacent
for sure.
I mean, I wouldn't put it on, like, the same. If I had, like, a bookcase that was, like, all my Star Trek Blu-rays, I wouldn't put Galaxy Quest in there with them. But I'd put it somewhere close by.
I'd put it, like, maybe on the same shelf, but, like, way far away, like, in the comedy section or something like that. I don't know.
Liz is pointing out in the audience that technically Galaxy Quest has one F-bomb, which is, of course, the mouthed F-bomb from Sigourney Weaver that didn't make it.
It's dubbed over.
Dubbed over, yes.
Dubbed over F-bomb. That's going to be fun. But I'll watch that in the Text Rec Discord sometime. I watched this Black Mirror episode with Joel a couple of nights ago. And I don't know. I'm going to be watching some Halo in there. Halo Season 2 is coming to Paramount nice. Plus. So maybe I'll watch some Halo.
Galaxy Quest
one.
Is unique in that it is a parody, 100% parody. But it also ends up being an homage. So I agree with Rachel on that one.
Joel's saying it's on Pluto with ads, so people can watch Galaxy Quest there.
It's on Blu-ray. It my...
yeah, if you could just get Sohail to let you crash at his place, you go catch an episode, catch it with him.
Everyone in the Text Trek audience is welcome at my place.
By the way, it was good podcasting with you, or live streaming with you again, Sohail. It's been
Thank
a while.
You. It's, you know, no, it's nice to
good,
be back.
Always good to see you, man.
Sohail, you're bringing back your weekly animated series.
It's back,
streams.
Yes. Yes, we're
so
finally
tell us a little bit about that.
We've got over a year ago we started discussions, weekly discussions, episode by episode of Star Trek the Animated Series. I'm actually on a whole journey. I started with The Next Generation. We did the original series after that, and now we're doing the animated series. And then when we finish that, we're going to start Deep Space Nine, which is really exciting as well. So yeah, it's time to get back. As the Romulans said in TNG,
we are back.
So,
and Starfleet Boy After Dark is at
Starfleet
least making
Soheil
one night.
Or Starfleet Boy, you could call it either one.
Soheil, could you do an opening where you have the serious ass shoulder pads of the Romulans? Yes. And you're like, we are back.
That's a great idea. I think I'm going to do that. But yeah, Starfleet. Yeah,
that was Marco Lima. That was Gold Dukat, right?
Yeah, that was.
Yeah.
Oh,
so
wow.
Before he was,
we're coming
Gold
back
Dukat,
with After Dark next week after Tex Trek. So after you guys talk about Galaxy Quest, we're going to do After Dark.
The TQIF lineup is this going to be for one night or is it going to be a weekly?
No. I'm bringing it back, baby.
Hell yeah.
Well, I like that.
I mean, we'll have breaks, of course, but yeah, it'll.
That makes me very, very happy.
Me too. I know y'all.
I won't fall into isolation. I'll be able to maintain those human connections and not turn into Robert Daly. Yeah, that's great to hear.
That's awesome. I'm preventing Father from becoming an asshole god. That's
you're
good.
A hero yourself. I hope you don't become an asshole god in your heroism.
And if we're doing those animated series discussions on Saturdays, I love watching animation on Saturday mornings. I'm a child of the 20th century, and I'll be watching some TAS in Saturday mornings in the Tex Trek Discord server. So if people want to partake in those, then by all
are you
means,
watching the Jihad
join.
This Saturday morning?
Yeah, I'm gonna watch Jihad Saturday. So
I'm gonna try to watch it with you. That's cool.
So come keep the conversation going in the Discord. Dave is doing his February movie challenge. He's gonna be reporting about some movies he's watching.
I was gonna mute myself because I'm in a room with a dog that's making some sounds, but I'm just gonna.
That's kind of cool.
Sounds like the puppy is ready for us to wrap. So we
probably so. Movies. But yes, I'm doing a little try to watch 30 movies in 30 days challenge. We're talking about it over on the Discord. I've watched 3 of the movies already, and so I'm moving along quite well for February. Super. And I'll post about what I've watched so far in the Discord later on.
Yeah, so I'll post in there what times I'll be watching stuff. I don't know. I'm trying not to give myself too busy of a schedule to too many commitments. But,
sure.
I try the same thing, Father, and I always fail. But I'm gonna try. I try harder.
I will commit to coming back next week live Friday night at 7 p.m. Central to talk about some Galaxy Quest, and of course the show's available to listen to wherever you get your podcast. And until next time, as always, live long and prosper, y'all.
Listen to the Tex Trek podcast through Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Spotify, or at tex-trek.com. Like us on Facebook at facebook.com/tex-trek. And follow Fathery on Twitter at TXTrek. Please support us by liking our videos and subscribing to our channel on YouTube. Thank you and take care.